The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Last week, I tried to give a simple talk on being here. Simplicity. I think simplicity of being is a wonderful thing. Just to be here in a simple way, be present, peacefully, at ease. And it's a nice ideal. And one of the very important principles of our practice is not to be too caught up in ideals. And as we like to say, if there's a difference between the ideal and what's actually happening, look at what's happening. That's really where the practice is. So the ideal sometimes works as a reference point to help us to see better what's actually happening. So if the ideal is to be here and now, be present in a simple way, here and now, ease and peaceful and alert and awake to what's here, that's the ideal. Part of the function of that ideal is not to measure yourself negatively because you can't live up to it, but rather the function of the ideal is to help you see more clearly what's actually happening. So to notice how you're not here, how you're preoccupied and caught up and the forces of the mind that keep you distracted. And a very important part of mindfulness practice is to study that, to really understand that well, to look at that. Sometimes there's a tendency when we don't get to what we want or what we think is supposed to happen, in spiritual circles, don't live up to our spiritual ideals, there can be a lot of negative attitudes towards what's getting in the way of those ideals. We can be dismissive of them, we can be angry at them, we can be angry at ourselves, we could, all kinds of things can happen. And the task with mindfulness practice, and part of the beauty of mindfulness practice, is learning how to turn towards what's actually happening, not to dismiss it, not to be negative, not to be caught up in shoulds and shouldn'ts, but if it's happening, study it, get to know it, turn towards it. And so the judo or the aikido of mindfulness is that we turn towards the very thing that makes the practice difficult. The very thing that makes the practice difficult becomes the practice. Rather than leaving it be something difficult like it shouldn't be happening, it becomes what we bring our attention to and study and understand, and kind of like we go through what's going on to become free. We don't bypass it. I don't know if it was Jack Kornfield, but he certainly likes this term. Maybe he coined it, spiritual bypass, which usually is not considered very healthy to do, but rather the approach is to really go toward into what's actually going on for you, who you are, what's happening. Be very honest about it, and in that honesty, learn to be at a certain kind of ease with it, not condoning it or acting in ways you shouldn't act, but go towards it and through it and come out the other side. Find your freedom through it rather than dismissing it or judging it. So a big part of this tradition of mindfulness is to learn the skill of turning towards what's actually happening. And so what I'd like to offer you today is five different aspects of this practice of mindfulness of turning towards something, towards the difficulties, towards the distractions, to the forces of the mind that keep you from, make it difficult for you to be present. And so here comes the air conditioner again. What do you think? Now it's set at 76. Should we leave it on, or should we? Is it good now? This 76 is good. Leave it on. People are getting hot. I thought it was getting too cold before. Too cold now. We have more. We have just right. We're going to leave it then. It seems like the yays are more than the nays. So sorry for the nays. So there's five parts, five aspects, and I've come up with this little acronym that I thought might be helpful for this, and that is Bella. Bella, and at least in Italian, I don't know if it means beautiful. You follow this process, you'll discover the beauty of your own mind and heart. So the acronym B stands for be. Just let it be. The E stands for examine. The first L stands for lesson. The fourth L stands for let go. And the fifth, the A, stands for appreciate. So be, examine, lesson, let go, and appreciate. So if especially I think here in America, more than what I heard how mindfulness was taught in Asia, the language of letting be or allowing or accepting is fairly prominent. It probably has certain kind of historical and sociological reasons why the primary teachers of this practice in America, Western Buddhist teachers, emphasize this. But I'd like to say it's because it's for many people in the West, this has been helpful because they don't do that. They're often, they're in contention with what's going on. They're in conflict. There's wanting and not wanting. There's judging and feeling bad about themselves. A whole slew of things that can abate if we learn to just accept or allow things as they are. Just let them be. A lot of people are doers. And they're constantly doing. In fact, some of the teachers I studied with in Asia, in Burma and Thailand, they kind of like were trying to get the Americans to stop doing so much in the practice. You know, calm down, you guys. Don't be so ambitious. Don't just. But then they also said, we wish some of our Thai and Burmese students would do half as much doing as these Americans who are just all these doers. So because of this strong tendency for many people to do and fix and make better and try to have get things, and here in the West, many times people emphasize the same, just allow, accept. And one of the ways to say that is to let be. Let it be. Beingness of who we are. And we find in the West kind of sometimes the teachings of being rather than doing. The spirituality in the West sometimes has to do with just let yourself be. Discover the beauty of being, beingness, rather than doingness. And for people who are big doers, it's a great relief to do this. One of the really important, so as a first step, rather than the last step, if it's the last step, then we're in trouble. If we just let everything be, then there's maybe no change. But as a first step, it's very powerful because as we step back so we can then let it be and we can look at it more carefully. So there's all kinds of things that might happen that we wish didn't happen, that ideally wouldn't happen, that's unfortunate that's happening, or that it's really good that it's happening. And if the mind's tendency is to quickly get involved, to judge, to entangle, to make commentary about it, to measure yourself in relationship to it, your self-identity issues, then the practice of let it be, just be with it, is a antidote to all that fixing and doing. So a lot of people find it very helpful to cultivate and develop, train themselves to just be. If they're angry, let it be, just be with it. Be with the anger. As opposed to fix it or judge it or decide that it shouldn't be there. Don't repress it, don't act on it, just be with it. If you're feeling sad, be with it. As people internalize a tremendous amount of messages from society, family, and life experience that emotions and things inside shouldn't be there, we have to fix it, we have to do something. And sadness and depression is one of them. I think there's a fair amount of secondary suffering that comes around depression or society because people feel like it shouldn't be there. It's upset. Sometimes depression is a serious condition. But I told someone this last week, they came and told me they were depressed, and I said, good. And the person kind of laughed and smiled and said, Gil, you're the only person who can say that. But I kind of meant it because hearing the person's story of their life and what was going on for them at this particular time in their life, I just felt like it was appropriate to be kind of sad and depressed. And then I said, you know, a field needs a fallow time in order to kind of, you know, to kind of regenerate itself. And sometimes sadness and depression is just a time to kind of hunker down and let this fallow time be there. It's not necessarily a sign that something is wrong. So the idea of just let it be, to be sad. Just if you're happy, be happy. It's just it's a children's song. And the so this be, just be with what's there. Or if there's something happening around you that you don't like, the air conditioner's on too much, or it's on too little. And since you can't fix it, maybe is it time to train yourself in what it's like to be with something which is not to your liking, just to be. It's a powerful training to do this, and it's often a good place to begin, because as we learn the skill of letting things be, then we can see more clearly. If we're seeing what's going on through the filters of our desires and aversions, or what we want and our ideals and what should and shouldn't happen, we're seeing what's happening through the filter of our self-identity, who I am and how people are going to see me, then we don't see clearly. And we're trying in mindfulness to learn to see clearly. So that's part of the value of letting be. We're not letting be so it can stay there forever. We're letting it be partly so we can see it clearly. And that's the second step of Vela, which is to examine. And probably in mindfulness practice, this is one of these two steps, letting it be and examining, are the two most important aspects. So then begin to examine, look more carefully. And examining generally in our mindfulness meditation tradition, it does not mean analysis. It doesn't mean like thinking about it and remembering and wondering why it's there. But rather it's kind of silent. Kind of look very carefully with the silence of the mind to see more clearly, to feel more clearly, to let it register more fully, to really take in what is this experience in and of itself. If you're angry and you're doing mindfulness meditation, in the meditation, this is not the time to wonder why you're angry and who was wrong and what should happen and the whole history of your experience with anger. The investigation is to what is it like in the present moment? What's the present moment lived experience of being angry, independent of who's right and wrong? Just the experience itself. To feel it and sense it. What's it like physically? What's it like emotionally? What's it like energetically inside of you? What is your relationship to it as part of the examination as well? What are some of the beliefs that you hold in relationship to whatever it is you're experiencing? Do you believe it's good or bad or right or wrong, or that it should be different or should be this way? So we want to start looking at what's happening, what's operating in the present moment. And this is the examining part, the looking, understanding. Generally in Buddhism, early in this tradition of ours, the freedom, the spiritual, the inner freedom, the inner awakening that this tradition points to is built on the foundation of clearly understanding what's happening. And one of the things that we're clearly understanding is how we are not free, how we're caught, how we're preoccupied. So we're kind of trying to clearly understand the bad news as opposed to kind of taking refuge in the good news. That makes sense? Because if we understand how we get caught, we understand how we get attached, then we can, our awakening and our freedom can be more realistic. We can see and understand what's actually going on. And probably, chances are, you're going to get attached and caught up again in the future. But if you've really started to learn how you get caught and stopped and be with it and seen it and understood it, examined it, then when it occurs tomorrow or the next day or the next week, you're familiar with it, and you're more likely to be able to stay free and not get pulled into its orbit. So the first, this acronym BELLA, the first thing is to be, the second is to examine. And then the third aspect is to lessen. And sometimes the distractions, the forces of in the mind and the heart are quite powerful. Aversion, desire, restlessness, agitation, sometimes they're quite powerful inside of us that we can actually cause problems for ourselves and the world around us. We don't see clearly. And so when addiction, for example, is really strong, when hate is really strong and we feel like we're in the danger of doing something we would later regret, what can we do? And once you see this is going on, one of the important things to do is to lessen the intensity of it. Not again to diminish it, I mean to dismiss it or to be negative towards it, but just because it's wise to reduce the intensity of some of the very strong forces we have. And so how do we do that? Probably each of you have your own way of doing that. Some people go for a walk. Some people will go eat. Some people take a shower. Some people meditate. Some people, go exercise. Some people relax. In meditation, focusing on relaxing the musculature of your body is a way of reducing the intensity. Sometimes people do redirect their attention to something, because as long as the mind is focused on the concern that's so intense, it kind of self-perpetuating, it kind of feeds itself and stays strong or gets stronger. And sometimes you have to break the cycle by having the mind focus on something else. Sometimes there's very wise use of distraction. Distract yourself. If you're in danger, if something is so intense that it's getting dangerous for you. So find something wholesome, something skillful, useful to distract yourself or to focus on someplace else. Like in meditation practice, some people find that focusing on loving-kindness meditation is a way to kind of redirect the attention for a while. And then later, when things are lessened, you can go back and focus on the anger that you had. Or the fear. Fear, some people will spin out with fear, kind of into panic attacks. And it's simply not helpful to keep looking at the fear because it triggers more panic. And so you want to maybe distract yourself to lessen it. Focus on something else. So there's many ways of lessening. And sometimes that's important. Then, having learned how to be with something, learned how to examine it, learned to lessen it, to relax it, to soften it a little bit, then the next L of Bella is to let go. And this is, I think, the practice of letting go sometimes is very strongly associated with Buddhism. Renunciation, letting go, a non-attachment. And some people are troubled by this because the emphasis is on losing something. You let go of something and you don't have it anymore. Sometimes the word attachment in English is a good thing. Children are supposed to develop healthy attachment to their parents and parents to their children. When there's not without proper attachment in growing up, psychologists think there's a problem, attachment disorders. But in Buddhist English, when a Buddhist teacher talks about attachment, my wife was part of an organization here when our kids were young called BAP, Bay Area Attachment Parenting. Here I was coming to IMC teaching people how to be not attached, and my wife was going off with this group to get it, be attached. But there was a whole different use of the word attachment, right? So when a Buddhist teacher uses the word attachment, it's just another way of saying clinging tight, holding on tight, and squeezing the life out of something. Letting go, that kind of implies what we're letting go of. But I think in Buddhist spirituality, as we get deeper into it and we're mature in it, there's a greater and greater appreciation that it's not so much that we're letting go of something that we're emphasizing, but in the letting go, we're gaining something. There's a gain. So if I have my fist clutched tight, that tight fist might be useful for something, but not a lot of things. And don't get too close. I might find it useful. But if I let go, if I let go of my tight fist, I lose my fist and my defensive weapon, but I gain something else. And what I gain, as I gain a relaxed, open hand, fingers are relaxed, that now is useful as a tool. I can do a lot of wonderful things with my hand. The soft part of my palm that's very sensitive now becomes available. And I can maybe, you know, touch someone, you know, with kindness, and something gets transmitted in that. So there's something gained in letting go of the fist. So the same thing in the mind. When the mind is a tight fist and grasped and clinging and holding tight, there's something to be gained in that freedom and that openness and that sensitivity that comes when we're willing to let go. So Buddhist spirituality is often marked then by this process of letting go. Sometimes letting go is something we can do. And sometimes it's a process that we have to make space for and allow for. It's not necessarily something we do, but we have to let go of the resistance to letting go. And then there's a natural process of letting go. And I like to think of it that way, that because it takes energy to cling. It takes energy to grasp. And when there's energy and applying energy and doing, sooner or later, the whole thing wants to rest, let go. If you hold your fist really tight, sooner or later your fist is going to ask you, please, relax, you know, open up. It takes a lot of work, you know, all that work is exhausting. So the clingings of our heart and the mind takes effort and energy, and sooner or later the cost of that energy and application becomes too much. And this is one of the advantages of meditation practice, is as we get calmer and more still in meditation, the cost and the energy, the effort it takes to cling, stands out in the highlight. And one of the reasons some people will let go is not because they have wisdom about the thing they're holding on to is no longer worth holding on to, but rather they have wisdom about the effort I'm expending. It's just, I can't, why? I'm meditating. Why should I be grasping onto whatever, you know, it's not present in the moment. It's just an idea about the future, idea of the past, idea of that person, idea of something. I'm grasping to ideas. And I'm sitting here quietly with my eyes closed, and that thing that I'm so attached to is not here and now. It's exhausting to keep thinking about it. Maybe it would be okay for the last 10 minutes of the sitting to relax, to let go. Maybe letting go for those last 10 minutes, while you give yourself permission, if you give yourself permission to pick it up again at the end, maybe then it's easier to let go for those 10 minutes. Because it's so hard to let go, right? Sometimes. So to be with what's happening, let it all be, examine, lesson, and then let go. And then the fifth part of this bella is to appreciate. And this is maybe the underappreciated part of our practice. And that is to appreciate what it's like to have let go, what you've gained, the benefits that come, the openness, the freedom, the ease, the relaxation, the sensitivity, the kindness, the compassion, the wisdom, the understanding that comes. If nothing else, appreciate that it's so nice not to be in the grasp of something. It's so nice not to be distracted and preoccupied and caught up. You know, it's possible for people to sit in meditation for a long time and to feel, just notice how mind is churning away and caught. But as the practice works, but sometimes it takes a while, and then at some point, this churning and the attachment and preoccupation settles, and lo and behold, you're here and present. The mind is not going off in the past anymore, in the future, just here. So then it's really good to really appreciate that. Wow, this is nice. This feels good. Because in the appreciation of the benefits that come with the practice, it's kind of like we're learning, this is, it's kind of reinforcing in the mind and the heart, and this is a good thing. As we appreciate what it's like to be not preoccupied, not caught up, not attached, it becomes a reference point to help us understand better when we do get attached. It's a contrast. So if I walk around with my fist always clenched, it might become normal for me. So normal, it doesn't occur to me there's another way. And then someone comes along, like, you know, my kids, when they were young, we played the game where they would try to pry my fingers open. You know, and they're small, I was still stronger than them. Unfortunately, so I'd keep my grasping. But, you know, someone comes along and pries your fingers apart. and say, oh, look at that, that's possible. Isn't that, that feels good. And then take your time, really feel it and feel the breeze against your palm and feel what's nice and relaxed and all that. And then when you start clenching up again into a fist, you're more likely to notice, oh, this is different. I know another way. I know to be open and relaxed. So the same thing with the mind or the heart, to appreciate what it's like, the freedom, the openness, the letting go, to no longer preoccupied that you have. So to strengthen the tendency to move in that direction, to help you give your reference point to, for the examination part, for seeing what's there. So if you find your, if, when you find yourself not able to be in the present moment with your practice, then you can turn towards whatever it is that's making it difficult to be in the present and make that your practice. And then you might consider this acronym, BELLA, beautiful. Be, examine, lesson, let go, and appreciate. And see if some of those steps of that are useful for you, help you kind of address and stay present. Stay engaged with what's happening. Don't get lost again in your thoughts. Stay with it. And see if that, those steps help you then to kind of show up and arrive more here, to be present more fully here for your experience. And I'm quite confident that over time, if you do this practice or do this Bella thing, that you'll discover how beautiful you are, how Bella you are. Because in every heart and every mind, there's tremendous amount of beauty. The beauty that's there when it's not obscured or covered over by our clingings and preoccupations and things that we have. So, now it's your turn. So do you have any questions about that or comments you'd like to make? Yes, and if you could say your name first before you start, that'd be nice.
My name is Sabrina. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. When you said that when you're here and your mind wanders, then the practice can be turning to whatever is drawing your mind away?
Yes.
Could you say more about that?
Yeah, so, maybe for example, if I'm a single dad this week, mm-hmm. and two kids at home, so I sit down to meditate, and I'm thinking about how am I going to manage to have time to cook all those meals, clean all those dishes. I made lunch yesterday for my two boys, and it was kind of a big lunch, and there's a lot of cleaning up. So I fed them, and I started cleaning up, and I was cleaning up the everything. And just about when I was finished cleaning up, one of them came into the kitchen and said, I'm hungry. What? More dishes. So anyway, that's a sidetrack. But so I'm thinking about, so I started thinking, oh, what should I cook, and how am I going to clean, and I leave the laundry in the dryer, and or whatever, all the thoughts. And so that's, my mind is distracted and keeps going in there. So then what I could do is I can turn towards that mind in a sense, say really admit to myself, oh, what's going on now is I'm thinking about all the domestic chores I have to do. And then I can look at that, what is that like for a human being right now who's thinking about domestic chores and all the list of things? What is that like? Oh, it feels like a lot of energy in the head. And if I look into my emotions, I feel like there's worry underneath it. And so let me feel the worry. And then I look, what's the beliefs that are operating in the present moment around that? And that might be harder to find, but maybe the beliefs are that that unless I'm on top of it, there's going to be anarchy at home. And that belief, fear of anarchy, contributes to that worry that I have. And so as I start, so it starts identifying what's actually happening here and now around it, the idea is to really stay in the present moment of what's going on. Then I'm in the present moment and I'm being mindful of what is. And that, what happens to me when I do this is that I tend to relax. I tend to just be more fully here. And as I'm more fully present and relaxing, then the force of distraction become weaker. And then pretty soon I'm not thinking about laundry and dishes. So is that an example kind of work?
Yes, thank you. That was right on.
I'm Trudy, and I'd like to know more about the L's, the lessening, particularly lessening, and then letting go.
Yes.
So could you say more about those?
To lessening. So lessening, partly it's a natural process that will happen, that our attachments, the more we practice, the more we're mindful, the more present, there's a natural relaxing and softening and letting go and lessening that goes on. So sometimes if we just keep doing our practice, and you can feel that sometimes in meditation. You sat for 45 minutes. My guess is that a fair percentage of you probably found that some of those concerns that were strong when you first sat down by the end of the 45 minutes had lessened, and you weren't so caught by them as you were at the beginning. Though I'm sure some of you had the opposite, that you were quite happy and peaceful at the beginning, but by the end you were. But generally it works in this direction, that just doing the practice, things quiet down and lessen, they relax. But also it can be done intentionally. You can choose to reduce the intensity, turn the volume down. And so so it might be that, again, sort of physically relaxing, doing something physical. Some people find that exercising can reduce the intensity of certain kinds of emotions and strong things. Some people find a nap. Some people find sitting and having a cup of tea or talking with a friend and kind of decompressing with a friend can be useful. Journaling can be helpful, or doing art can be helpful. Reading a book can be helpful. There's many things that one can do to kind of lessen it. Some people, exercise, yoga. And then, there's always meditation. You can choose to meditate in order to reduce the intensity, to calm down. So there's a natural byproduct of lessening intensity that comes with meditation, and then there's the intentional things you can do. And then the letting go, I'm not sure what to say. Maybe I can ask you, is there a particular question or concern you have around that would help me in addressing?
Well, I think using the suggestions you made of lessening would help.
Letting go.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think it would work fine.
Yeah, because sometimes it's a little bit oppressive, these Buddhist teachers who say, let go, like me, right? Just let go, it's so easy, just let go. But it's not easy. And sometimes the way that mind or the way we're holding on so tenaciously to some of our attachments, it's like inconceivable to sometimes that it's possible to let go. I mean, it's like the world wouldn't exist if I let go. How could it can't be? It's like, and it's impossible. It's like just inconceivable. And because it's so strong or so built into the structure of who we are, it just seems like that's the way it is. And so to say let go is kind of, just not helpful at the best. And by lessening the intensity of them, then over time it gets to a point where, this makes sense. It's so soft, it's so weak now. It makes sense. I can see now that I can just let it go. Back in the time of the Buddha, in his teachings, he described sometimes the letting go or the freedom from attachments not as a sudden kind of big bang theory of enlightenment, just suddenly they're gone, but rather as a slow thinning out, the slow wearing away. You might have a. He used the example of a. I think it was an axe handle, that the axe handle, you know, the axe gets used over and over again. It gets weaker and weaker, thinner and thinner. At some point, it breaks. But you don't know when it's going to break, but you know, it breaks because it got thinner and thinner and thinner and weaker and weaker. But it takes a while of using it. An example I like that of a string that gets thinner and thinner and thinner and thinner and thinner, you somehow over time. And it finally, you know, first it might be like a really big, strong piece of rope, but over time it gets thinner and wears out, gets frayed, until finally just a little thin thread left holding it, and then it goes. And so the attachment to self, some of the deeper attachments we have, get thinner and thinner and thinner and thinner and thinner. They lessen and lessen, and then at some point they go. And that process can be, that having it go slow that way can be very helpful because it can feel so meaningful, so satisfying, so wonderful, all the steps along that way. And so, you know, the idea of just letting go of something, just boom, you know, cold, is can be quite frightening. But even the deepest letting go, where the mind has to let go, where we let go of ourself, we let go of the mind, lets go of itself. I mean, what's that like when the consciousness lets go of consciousness? What's that about, right? That's weird. And why would you want to do that? But if you follow this process of lessening and thinning and gradualness, it just feels so, it's so profoundly peaceful and delightful and luminous and translucent, this whole process, that of course you'd want to go all the way. Of course you want to disappear. Who wouldn't want to disappear when the way there is so great? So lessening. Yes?
My name is Isabel. Are the two L's not a contradiction to B? To the B?
Yes, they are. So the two L's a contradiction to the first one, just be with what's there. What I said was that B is a good place to begin. And so you begin there, and then once you be and get familiar with it enough and know how to just let it be and examine it enough to know what's going on, then you can use your wisdom to decide whether is it useful to lessen the intensity of it. So if you're having a problem with your neighbor and you're just about ready to torch his house down, and you have enough presence of mind to realize that you're fuming with anger and about to kind of create this major problem for your block, that might be a really good time to lessen the intensity rather than let it be. So we don't want to let the being practice be the ultimate and only thing we do. And I've seen that sometimes in these mindfulness circles, partly people listening to me too much, that that they think that the only thing they're allowed to do is to just be with things. And I think it's quite powerful to just be with what's there. But it's not the only thing we can do. There's other things to do. It's just a tool. There's other tools, too. So we have to have the wisdom to know which tool to use at different times. Please. Where's the mic is near there.
Thank you. My name is Tom. What I'd like to ask you about is, I expect most of the people here have, as we look at the society we're currently living in, see some very major problems, some very major injustices. My question is, it seems that the mindfulness process, the meditation process that you're talking about, is really a way of improving our ability to see clearly, and that after we do that, then we can go over and look at social injustices, and it probably would be better not to let them get mixed up in your meditation. Is that a...
Oh, certainly that one, yes. Don't let the social issues get mixed up in your meditation, because there's no social injustice when you're meditating in the present moment. I mean, there is real issues in the world around us, but they're somewhere else at the moment. There's something more powerful to do in the moment than thinking about those and be distracted by them. You want to clear. So I've met a lot. There's a lot of people. I meet who come to Buddhism because they were involved in politics, social activists, And they got troubled with how they were in that scene. They were angry, they were, some other people, they were manipulative, they got full of fear, they were anxious. There was all these kind of ways in which they did it, which they didn't find so useful. And so they wanted to find a different way. And so clearing out, learning to relax, learning to let go, learning to see clearly, so that when they're involved in social action, they're not doing it from a place of anger or fear, but doing it out of compassion and caring. And so I think it's very important. I appreciate the question because I was so adamant when you said, you know, no, not in meditation. You know, put it aside for sure. The problem with saying that is that if I'm a meditation teacher, so if I'm only teaching meditation, and that's all, you get the impression from me then that there's no place for any ever to be social activist. You know, it's just all about just meditating and just being peaceful and closing your eyes. And that's not the message I want to get across. And what I hope is that the deep and very important inner work that meditation can do not only helps us to see clearly, but also removes any of the obstructions, any of the fear, any of the inhibitions that prevent us from acting on our compassion, acting from what we see in the world. And so we have an ability to actually respond more fully. I believe it's a natural thing that as we go deep into this practice, that what arises within us is a tendency to want to respond to the world around us. And each person will find their own response. Some people, the response is very local in their family. Some people, it's global, different ways. Is that an answer to your question?
Thank you very much.
Okay. Okay, so time to end. And I really want to underscore one thing here to all of you. And that is, you're beautiful. So maybe Bella will help you see that for yourself. Thank you.